Welcome to the Skinny Podcast, where we talk all things dermatology. I'm Carol Nicotero Ward.
And I'm Terry Rudd.
Let's start with a quick reminder. Our monthly podcast is available on iTunes for free. Search for us using the keywords The Skinny, Dermatology. We hope you subscribe.
Here are the stories we have for you this month. First, we'll learn about the link between psoriasis and diabetes risk, and what it means for your practice.
We'll bring you the details on the top research priorities in dermatology.
And then, one doctor's take on why flu vaccination is an ethical responsibility.
Later in the program, Cosmetic Counter host Dr. Lily Talakoub talks about paramedical micropigmentation, a technique she says should be part of every dermatologist's toolbox.
And finally, Dr. Alan Rockoff talks about those free drug company pens. So stay with us. Let's get started. Carol?
Now let's talk about psoriasis. It turns out that this systemic disease puts patients at risk of diabetes. In fact, a study of more than 4 million Danish children and adults shows that patients who have severe psoriasis are twice as likely to develop diabetes. So what's the role of dermatologists? Nassim Miller has more on that part of the story.
Dr. Craig Leonardi has seen thousands of patients with psoriasis. He has also seen how research like the recent Danish study shows that psoriasis is more than just a skin disease.
This is a systemic inflammatory disease, and it touches a lot of different internal organ processes in our patients. And it means that those of us who treat psoriasis really need to be thinking about all of the extra manifestations of this disease if we want to take care of our patient's whole health picture.
So the question is, should dermatologists take the time to screen and manage their psoriatic patients for other related diseases?
You know, dermatology is wrestling with this concept. We don't know if are the dermatologists ready to take on the screening themselves or even the management of some of these issues. And I think the answer is no. I think that we decided a long time ago to be dermatologists and not to be internists. And so the most rational thing for us to do is to communicate with the family physician or the primary care physician and let them know. It may be in the form of a form letter that is sent to the PCP, and just saying, listen, newer data shows that a wide variety of important issues are associated with this disease, and I'd appreciate you seeing our mutual patient annually and during that visit to pay attention to cardiovascular risk factors.
The Danish study offers convincing data on patients with severe psoriasis, but it also shows a link for patients with mild forms of the disease.
The finding that there was what it was almost a 50% increase incidence of diabetes in patients even with mild psoriasis means that you don't have to have the severe disease to have these internal problems, that even mild psoriatics could have significant effects internally. This disease is turning out to be a lot more than we ever could have imagined 25 years ago. So stay tuned. I'm sure we're going to find out a lot more about it in the next 10 to 15 years.
In other research news, the American Academy of Dermatology has teamed up with other dermatology societies, patients, and government and industry representatives to set a research agenda for the specialty. Mary Ellen Schneider has the details.
Cutaneous oncology, pruritus, and performance outcomes and measurement top the list of critical research areas in dermatology. Dr. Henry Lim is chair of dermatology at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. He helped prepare the research agenda and explained why these three topics are so important.
these topics include the cutaneous oncology, where we deal a topic that we deal with on a daily basis. There is a significant gap in terms of research, in terms of patient education, in terms of prevention. The pruritus is another one, another area that I think a lot of basic science research has not been done as widely as we should. It is a common condition that we all, as practicing dermatologists, see on a daily basis. But in terms of the management, we do not have a very, very good management for pruritus that is truly evidence-based.
The research agenda also includes performance outcomes, a topic that AAD officials say they must understand better if they want to keep up with pressure from Medicare and insurers to measure and pay for quality. The AAD and its partners crafted the research priorities after surveying 20 dermatology societies and 15 patient advocacy groups. Then in June, they met in Washington, D.C. for a two-day summit where they narrowed the list of priorities from 8 down to 2.
The group felt, after a very significant and very serious discussion and very thoughtful discussion, the group felt that these are the topics, these are the areas in dermatology that there is a significant gap in terms of the knowledge, in terms of research activity, that the academy as an organization should be able to facilitate and to assist in closing the gap, in narrowing the gap.
Over the next few months, three work groups will formulate ideas for how to turn the list of priorities into a roadmap for research.
The three work groups currently are starting their teleconferences and discussion. The charge to these three work groups is to make recommendations that would help the academy to move this area forward. And so these three work groups should be able to come, I would expect, with fairly good recommendations by the next AAD meeting, which will be in March.
Did you get your flu shot yet? There's no excuse for not getting vaccinated this year. It's good for you, but you also owe it to your patients. Heidi Spleet explains.
Dr. William Schaffner, past president of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, says flu shots are a must for all healthcare workers. It's all about professional responsibility.
I think it's absolutely essential for healthcare workers to be vaccinated against influenza each and every year. I think it's an ethical and a professional responsibility. There are two reasons. The first is patient safety. We don't want to transmit our influenza virus to our patients, many of whom are already sick. And then the other, of course, is when influenza strikes, we have to be vertical, not horizontal. We have to be ready to provide health care, so we need to be protected.
Despite all the reasons to get vaccinated, many healthcare workers still skip flu shots. So, what can clinicians do to keep their patients safe?
The way for clinicians to organize for everyone in their staff to be vaccinated is, number one, be vaccinated yourself. And then you must be vaccine insistent. You have to say, we do this for our patients. I expect everyone in this office to be vaccinated and protected so we can protect our patients. And then they have to remind them, the vaccine doesn't create flu. You can't get flu from the flu vaccine, and it is safe and effective. So do it yourself. Insist on it, and then explain why.
Now it's time for our monthly cosmetic counter segment with Dr. Lily Talakoub. Paramedical micropigmentation can offer patients a permanent fix for covering scars and disfigurements, but it's not always a simple choice. Here's Dr. Talakoub with more.
Paramedical skin camouflage and paramedical skin micropigmentation are very important and yet poorly understood practices in patients with chronic skin problems. Disfigurement from skin conditions such as vitiligo, birthmarks, port wine stains, and scarring from burns or surgery can cause significant emotional and psychological distress. Oftentimes, dermatologists have no satisfactory options for their patients with chronic disfigurement. Paramedical skin micropigmentation differs from skin camouflage. Paramedical camouflage uses corrective makeup to cover disfiguring skin problems.
paramedical micropigmentation is a form of permanent makeup or tattooing that is matched to the underlying skin color and is used to permanently conceal disfigurement and scars. One of the leading uses of micropigmentation is the reconstruction of the areola after radical mastectomy for breast cancer. However, its use is gaining popularity with dermatologists and plastic surgeons for other disfiguring skin conditions, such as repigmenting the skin with skin tone match tattoos in patients with disfiguring vitiligo or burn scars. Finding a qualified micropigmentation expert is, however, very difficult, as this procedure requires extensive training, understanding of the skin pathology, and experience. Each state requires different levels of training and certification. However, many states do not have any laws governing the practice. I offer this procedure to my patients and work closely with the technicians performing the procedures. The skin should be completely healed without any open wounds, barrier defects, or signs of infection. All micropigmentation technicians should also be certified by the American Academy of Micropigmentation. And, as with any cosmetic procedure, encourage your patients to see before and after photos of actual patients treated by that technician. Finally, similar to tattoos, finding a practice with clean, autoclaved, and sterilized equipment is crucial to avoid infection. Paramedical micropigmentation should be in the armamentarium of any dermatologist, and as improving disfigurements can be life-changing in patients. To find a reputable technician in your area or to refer your patients, log on to the American Academy of Micropigmentation website at micropigmentation.org.
And now, from his office in Brookline, Massachusetts, Dr. Alan Rockoff talks about the power of the pen. For marketing, that is.
They recently changed the law, and we are once again allowed to get gifts with corporate logos on them. I haven't seen any mugs yet, but the pens are back. I don't even know whether the law was state or federal, but in a world of political violence, economic turmoil, and global warming, being able to write with a pen named for a drug firm or pathology lab restores my sense that the universe is in balance after all. And then today I got a pen in the mail with my own name on it, Alan S. Rockoff, M.D. They wanted me to buy 1,000 or 5 to get my name out there and increase name recognition. This is a charming and old-fashioned way to do that, since nowadays the preferred approach is to get out there on Facebook and Twitter and to be tops on Google searches. But getting that pen put me in mind of a piece of mail I got many years ago when I was just starting out and had hardly any patients. It was a window envelope printed with this message in bold caps and topped with an exclamation point. You could have these to hand out. In the envelope window was a ballpoint pen, and on the pen was written, Dr. Alan S. Fockoff. Yes, that is what it said. I didn't order any of these pens or use the one they sent. Somehow, my name got out there anyway, by other means. Well, enough nostalgia. Time to sign off. This is Dr. Alan. This is Dr. Alan. Rockoff! Phew! Got it right. That was close.
That's it for us. We'd like to thank this month's contributing reporter, Heidi Spleet. Our producers are Nassim Miller and Mary Ellen Schneider. And this podcast comes together under the guidance of Skin and Allergy News Managing Editor, Amy Pfeiffer. I'm Terry Rudd.
And I'm Carol Nicotero Ward. Don't forget to visit our website, skinandallergynews.com. And remember that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes for free. Just search for The Skinny. We'll be back with more news in December.